Emmanuel Episcopal Church Centennial Telephone Interview. You've been recommended as one of those who has a lot of history in your head about the church. How long have you been associated with Emmanuel?
We moved here in 1942.
And you've been there ever since?
Yeah.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. Where were you born?
Where was I born? I was born on the Rosewood Reservation.
When?
When? 1980.
And
March 6th.
So you were married by the time you got to Rapid City?
No. We moved to Sturgis in 1916, and I was raised in Sturgis.
Oh, I see. You came to Rapid City in 42.
Yeah, I was married 31 down here in Maine.
But you lived in Sturgis at the time?
I lived in Sturgis, but we didn't have a priest.
Well, I see.
We came down here.
So you were married in Emmanuel in 1931. Who was the priest then?
Well, Protestant name, but we were married by David Clark, who was here for me.
Okay, would you repeat those names, please? Prosser.
Yeah.
Yeah. P-R-O-S-S-E-R.
Right.
He was the priest at Emmanuel.
That's right.
And who was the priest
and,
that married
David Clark.
So was David Clark, Father David Clark, from?
He was from Fort Pierce.
And you've been coming? That's unusual, isn't it?
I know. That's what I say. Now they have all the brigades, you know.
Uh-huh.
But we had made arrangements before that.
Now, then you've been coming to Emmanuel off and on before that, or was this your first time?
Well, we have been down. From was the back door. He stayed at our home. That was my father. So they, you know, we got home.
Then what was the circumstances of your coming to Rapid City in 42?
Everett got a job down here at Camp Rapid.
Became regulars at Emmanuel at that time and
yeah,
been there.
Right away.
You were raised Episcopalian, were you?
Yes, I was.
And so you were, go ahead.
Well, I was baptized by Bishop Roberts before he was a bishop.
Are you part Indian?
No, I'm not.
What?
My father was something called the Bald Farmer.
Oh, I see.
He worked for the Department of Interior.
No, I didn't think you were part Indian, but it's always well to check. In your years at Emmanuel, you were married there. Were any none of your children were baptized there, I don't suppose?
No, they were married. They were baptized in St. Thomas.
But were some of them married there?
Yes, my daughter was married there.
Her name is?
Esther Park. Esther Wayne Park. He got married by Jerome Pike.
Oh, yeah.
And our granddaughter was married by David. Father
David. David Anderson. What are some of the outstanding memories you have about Emmanuel? Things that would,
well, I thought some. I don't know how many years. And we used to teach Sunday school in the home that is where Harry Shelton, which would be his company. You see, the church used to have Bragman before they got Harry Shelton. Library.
You said you taught Sunday school where the parking lot is.
Well, yeah, they had a house.
It was a dwelling house.
It was a,
it was a dwelling house?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a good clue. We hadn't heard of that before.
Okay.
No, when was that removed? Sunday school, were there other activities in the janitor's home?
Well, they called, well, the janitor wasn't living there then they gave it to the janitor as he, he just took the school in the church and had, so like I'd have my class middle, and somebody else had one in the back, somebody else had one in the front.
Are some of those Sunday school students members now? What's the outstanding thing in your memory regarding the church? Did any of the people pitch in with their own hands and labor, or was it all hired?
Not much. Yes, a little bit, but not a lot.
What was the idea of the public dinners?
Well, just raise money to help with the building of the church.
Were they pretty well attended?
Yes, they were.
But that was a lot of work.
Yes, they were.
Was this in the days when you had one old crooked stove that would hardly work? Gail March was telling me about that old monster. She said you'd throw in a match and run for your life.
That's right.
That very thing.
Yeah. And,
advice on that. I think I hear him in the background. Would he have some salty comments for this?
Do you have any more comments? He's laughing at me now.
Tell him we'd be glad to have him in the among the interviewees.
Come the interview?
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to talk to him?
Sure.
I can't talk over the phone too good because his hearing aids with him at the time. But I'll be if he can make it.
All right. Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah. I took the hearing aid out.
Should I yell real loud? Good. You know what we're up to? We're putting together this centennial book on the parish. And you're one of the real old-timers around there. Do you have anything to tell in the way of remembrances, funny or sad or outstanding? What's your outstanding memory about the church?
Well, my outstanding memory about the church is we were always progressive.
Who was?
Always progressive.
The church was?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You were on the vestry.
Yeah, I was on the vestry.
Under who?
Harry Hackett.
Harry Hackett.
This has been an interview with Nettie, N-E-T-T-I-E, and Everett Rambo, R-A-M-B-O-W, a telephone interview on September 17th, 1986, in Rapid City, South Dakota. That is the end of the interview. Continuing the interview with Bishop Jones, he was speaking of his grandmother.
Well, then from there, I think it was 2 years later, they moved up on the Cheyenne River Mission. And while there, that's up near Gettysburg, South Dakota. And while he was there, he came in contact with the Reverend Dr. Edward Ashley, who was an English priest. He worked amongst our Indian people for 57 years. He could speak the language real well. He was quite influential with my grandfather and bringing him into the ministry. So my grandfather eventually was ordained in 1893. He came to Santee, Nebraska. And that's where he served for 30 years. That's where I lived with him.
That's where you grew up.
That's where I grew up, in San Pedro, Nebraska.
And doubtless he was a strong influence in your life in bringing you into the ministry.
Well, my grandfather died in 1929. So my grandmother was, she and I lived together for years. She was very influential in my furthering my education and going to a theological seminary.
Where did you go to seminary?
Seabury Western Theological Seminary.
Can you spell that for us?
Seabury, S-E-A-B-U-R-Y.
Seabury.
And hyphen W-E-A-W-E-S-T-E-R-N.
And that is in Evanston?
Evanston, Illinois. It's on the campus. It's considered a part of Northwestern University.
But it is Episcopal?
Episcopal, yeah.
Does Northwestern University have Episcopal roots?
No, Methodist.
But there's an Episcopal seminary on a Methodist campus.
No, not necessarily. I don't know what the arrangement is there, but anyway, it was looked upon as a part of the seminary. We could take courses at Northwestern University, but some people came over to and took courses at our seminary. And nearby there was a Methodist seminary.
So you were ordained in what year?
1938. In Pine Ridge.
You came out to Pine Ridge.
Pine Ridge Seminary. 5 days later, Blossom and I were married. I found out what I was going to get at a living wage, $40 a month.
Wow.
We thought, well, we never could afford to get married. We just had to get married anyway. We've been waiting for 4 or 5 years. You know,
Going back now to Emmanuel, you have known everybody, all the ministers, all the priests, since Reverend Pipes.
Well, I knew some. I knew better than others. Of course, when we were in South Dakota, of course, I knew them better. And after I became bishop, of course, I knew them real well. It was kind of an intimate relationship there. But. Emmanuel was the only church in Rapid City for a long time. So it was really...
Only church of any kind?
No, only church of Episcopal
only
church.
Episcopal church.
No, it was... I think it was the first church in the area, as I understand now. I may be wrong there. I think it was the first one.
Is it the mother church then of other Episcopal churches in the hills?
Yeah.
Can you think of any outstanding events within the parish that should be recorded for this purpose?
Well, I think since I've made bishop, I think one of the outstanding events was the Reverend Hanford King being elected Bishop of Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was, as far as I know, the only rector of the Emmanuel Church that was ever chosen to be bishop. And he was ordained in Boise, Idaho. And a large delegation from Emmanuel went out.
Excuse me, he was consecrated bishop?
Yes.
Boise.
Yeah. And we went out. We were able to go. Blossom and I went back to Seabury Western. I was given an honorary doctorate. So we went back there, and we flew in from Evanston right directly into Boise, Idaho, for the consecration. Norm and Jerry were there, but we came back with them. And I think that was one of the highlights of the Church. Maybe you can think of
that, didn't you? There's so many.
Well, I just found out the other day, one of the we have in Rapid City, we have a Winona Club. I don't know if you've ever heard of
Winona. I've heard of them, yes.
A Winona Club is made up of people who are interested in Indian affairs. And it began, it had its roots at Emmanuel Church. That's where it began.
Tell us about that.
Well, I think that Florence Youngquist was one of the early participants. And she's the only one I can remember.
And most of the women came from Rosebud.
From where?
Most of the women came from Rosebud.
Yeah.
And they worked with her.
Yeah. So they were instrumental in getting the library for Rapid City.
That's what I heard.
That's what we heard.
And then they had they were instrumental in getting help for children, handicapped children. That was how it started.
They were associated with Mrs. Kibben and Mrs. Custer.
Yes, and. See who else? Somebody else. Well, anyway, they were the ones that started that. They started many things in Rapid City.
And so it began in the church.
In the church, yeah. Mm-hmm. Believed in going through any kind of hardship as a means of showing, it's an outward showing of grief or. Well, it's kind of a sacrifice, it's a self-sacrifice to the Great Spirit for... And Christianity came on the scene, of course, they were instrumental in saying, well, now, listen, you can offer yourself, you can go all through the torturing you want, but we have one who gave his life. And he's the one who gave his life for each one of us. We don't have to torture ourselves. Well, we believe in him and we follow him. And so the Sundance just sort of just died away and then it was revived. This superiority.
There's also the book from That They May Have Life tells something about.
I have that book. Miss Mayles, isn't he the author of Mystic Warriors of the Plains?
I believe he is.
Yeah.
Do you have that book?
No.
No, we don't have that.
It's so precious, the library won't even let it out.
It's
in the rare section.
I wish we did have it. We have a few.
This is... take it from there.
Well, it is my personal belief that the so-called Indian religion, which I never had a part in, all I know is what I hear and what I read. But Christianity was a sum total of all of the Indian religion. I think that Christianity is what really deep down what our Indian people were looking for. They were looking for one who was perfect. And they tried to be perfect.
That's just what I was going to say.
They tried to be perfect in sweat bath and some of the acts of bravery but the one perfect person, the one that's given to us, is our Lord Jesus Christ. He is the perfect. He is the Redeemer of all mankind. And, for example, sweat bath to me is nothing more Christianity than a preparation for Holy Communion, receiving of Holy Communion. That's a cleansing. We're cleansed by His blood. And this is what I think this led right up to the Holy Communion. That's why at one time, I can recall back in 1930, everybody was a Christian. There were no Indians. Indian religion. None of them never heard of it until it revived years later, especially during this.
You started to say before I turned the machine on about how the young man to become a warrior had to go through these ceremonies.
I remember, I think an illustration was one of our clergymen that I knew. To me, he was one of my favorite native clergy, was the Reverend Clayton High Wolf. Now, High Wolf is a member of the Ogallala Sioux tribe. And he told me one time that he wanted to be a medicine man. So he was presented to the... they had a group of men, determined whether he was the kind of a person who would make a good medicine man. And his folks, he said his father and mother brought him to this group to be a candidate for holy man, candidate.
He was about how old?
I think he was probably very young, probably in his 20s. And so he had to go out for 3 days, I think 3 days and three nights. He had to go out, and then he had to, without anything to eat, and he had to go out and meet the Great Spirit and to come back and tell what the Great Spirit had told him. So he went out. He went out for 3 days and three nights, and he came back. And when he came back, and when he was supposed to appear before these men, his father and mother were there. They were proud of him. And when he came back, they asked him, he said, "Shug money to our country, High Wolf. What did you see? What did you have to, what did you encounter?" And he said, hey. And that's a phrase that's used by our Dakota people. "I didn't see anything." And he said his folks were crestfallen. He said he didn't see anything. And that's when he determined he went into the Episcopal ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm trying to say is that this is the kind of a deal that they went through. And then many of them had to go on quests. They had to go into battle before you were determined to be a warrior. And they tell a story of one man one time who went into battle, and he had some kind of medicine, and the medicine man had given him something, I don't know what it was. But anyway, it's some potion of some kind. And he went through the battle unscarred.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was determined as a good warrior. Now these are they're different ones. They're different. The human mind, just like a professor, he may give you one kind of examination, and he give you another, and another man he'd give another kind, or maybe he'd give a kind that's given to everybody. But I don't know. I don't know. It's just, to me, I mean, it's just a... You see, a lot of that, you see, it's handed down. It's an unwritten tradition. And some people now are picking it up. They're picking it up. And I think a lot of it is second-handed. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. It's hard to get it pure at this point.
Yeah. And so I just... I just don't know. I mean, and some people still believe in it, and if they can believe in it, and if it does them in some good, I don't know. Our Lord said, "By their fruits ye shall know them." And they talk about Mother Earth. They talk about Mother Earth. you go down the reservation, you see all, you go look at some of these homes, you see all these old cars around there. And you wonder, to them, just how sacred is Mother Earth? I mean, I don't know. I mean, as a man thinketh, so he is. And I just wonder sometimes, some of the things that people do, what are they thinking about? I mean, what's back in their mind? That's why I think Christianity is, I mean, plays a real important part in it. And that's the reason why we have, I mean, our work was very strong, has been very strong in South Dakota. And you come along like Mean, Russell Means, and he poo-poos everything. Yeah, you poo-poo everything, and then what have you got? You say, you go back to the old Indian religion. What is old Indian religion? I don't know. He don't know. He was raised in San Francisco. I mean, just all...
Did you experience any discrimination, any racial discrimination?
In what?
Did you experience any racial discrimination yourself?
Well, yes. I did in college.
Where did you go to college?
I went to graduate from Northern State at Aberdeen. And I went to Southern State, the one that's now a prison.
Was it Springfield?
Yeah, that's where my wife and I met. Mm-hmm. Well, we really met before then, but there was discrimination. But as I look back, a lot of it was caused by me. I was the one that was a discriminating person, mm-hmm. And I think that way today. I still think that you want to be discriminated against, okay? You be that way, and you will be discriminated. Sure, but as far as when I made suffragan bishop, I said I want it understood that I'm not a suffragan bishop just for Indian people. I'm a suffragan bishop for the church, and that's the way I feel.
In seminary, was there any discrimination?
Yes, there was, but a lot of them I know. I mean, one of my first experiences were. The Bishop of Oklahoma, Chilton Powell, and I were classmates.
Shelton?
Chilton. Chilton Powell. He's from North Dakota, originally. Devil's Lake, North Dakota. And he and I were studying Greek, you know, it was about midnight. We heard this laughing and going on, you know. And we knew that there was a bull session someplace. So we said, well, let's go down and see what's going on.
Was he Indian?
Huh?
Was he Indian?
No. I was the only Indian man.
Right.
And so they went down there, and I was standing in the doorway, you know, and I'm looking on, listening to what they were saying, and somebody said from the inside, Jones, what do you think this is, a cigar store? Come on and sit down. You see what I mean? That you could take that, but... You gotta laugh some of those things off, you know. You can't.
Well, do you think he meant it ill, or do you think he was just being funny?
Well, he just, you know.
He was welcoming you.
He was welcoming me, but he was. What they were really doing was trying to take me into their society, see, mm-hmm. into seminary. I thought, as I look back now, and many times that I thought was discriminatory actions were in me.
Mm-hmm. As a priest, did you feel any resistance or?
Oh, yeah, you can. I suppose there were in my low periods in my ministry. I felt that maybe people were, but for the most part, no. You know Joe Mustard?
I just know who he is.
And his wife. And her dad and mother were my former parishioners in Wahpeton, North Dakota. And I can remember when we went up there the first time. you know, we went to him, the Bishop of North Dakota, and I went seminary together. So, and we had a peculiar way of being brought into the church, becoming a vicar of that church. He said, the present vicar is going to resign tonight. And I went to Blossom and Norma to sit out in the car. And then when he resigned, he said, I'll call you in. So we sat out in the car. This was in March 1956. So we sat out in the car. All months of hers, Bishop Emery. And there he said, your priest just resigned, but he said, I have a man to recommend take people with. And he said, he's a man. He said, I've known him. We play football together, we play baseball, we're in seminary together. And he said, I don't want him hurt. And he went on there. So, none of my remark, after they'd gotten through, one of my remarks, they asked me for any remarks that I had to make, and I said, yeah, I have two. I said, how much money do you owe? And then I said, will you let me serve as a priest and not as an Indian? Mm-hmm. And afterward, I felt very badly about it because I was the one throwing it up. Mm-hmm. And then afterward, we found out that there was one family, or was it two families?
Two
families that didn't want us to come. Mm-hmm. One of them was an Indian family. They didn't want me to come because they didn't want me hurt. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the other one is.
Speaking of Mrs. Jones, you were saying that you used to get so mad at Father Pipes you could just have thrown a prayer book at him.
Well, after we were married and Norma was a little girl, we stayed once in a while at Camp Remington, and we'd come to church at Emmanuel. And I loved coming to church at Emmanuel, but I got very angry with Father Pipes because we would come, and I would slow down before we got here and take my time so that we would be late and we would be able to sit in church as a family, because a clergy family seldom ever get to sit together in church. And Father Pipes would be having the service, and he'd see my husband, and he'd say, I see Harold Jones in the congregation. Harold, will you come up and help me? So my husband would go up to help him, and Norma and I would have to sit alone and finish the service, which made me very angry. But I still like to come to Emmanuel. Another thing I do have to say, my husband, you asked my husband about having troubles with prejudice. I didn't encounter anything like that, except when I was at St. Mary's School in Springfield, South Dakota. I went to school with Indian girls, and I could not speak the English, the Indian language. So they mistreated me for that, because they thought that I was an Indian. I should speak the Indian language. I went to college, and a few tried to say things, but they didn't get to me. And I didn't feel, I had wonderful parents. My dad, Harry Steele, and my mother, Jenny, always told us that they impressed upon our minds that we were children of God, and that we were no better than anybody else, and nobody was better than we were. So in college, it didn't bother me one bit.
At college, these were the non-Indian girls who were saying them?
I was one of the few Indian girls in the college, and consequently, I think, maybe that was part of it,
I was chosen as the queen of the college.
Wow.
And, of course, when I was chosen as the queen of the college, I felt as though it was an honor, but I didn't deserve it because there were other girls who had worked hard to become the queen, and I felt badly for them, and I didn't want to take it. But I was chosen, and I had to go through with it, which was very, very hard for me.
What year was that?
34. And, but that's about all I have to say. But, Mom, they're so tan. What
kind of people are those? Oh, that's beautiful.
Recapping the foregoing, we didn't get it all on the tape, Blotson-related incident, which some children remarked about Indian people. What kind of people are those? They're so tan. That is the end of the Bishop Jones interview. As a matter of fact, that is the end of this tape. Run it on out to the end, and that's it.